Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You might say that you got to leave them there.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got 9:05. We'll go ahead and call this regular meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court to order at this time, noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we'd ask to place it on silence this time. And for those of you that are participating by Zoom, we'd ask to place your device on mute until such time that you would need to address the court. We'll begin this morning with the word of prayer. God, Father in heaven, we come before you today asking for the forgiveness of our sins. And Lord, we're so grateful for your presence to watch over this meeting. Lord, we're also thankful and grateful to you for the many blessings that you continue to bestow on Coryell County, our citizens, the state of Texas, our nation, and our world as a whole. Lord, we come before you today asking that you watch over those areas that are in conflict with the good and the evil. We know that you will have your best interest always served. And finally, Lord, we ask that you watch over, guide, and protect our first responders here on earth as you watch over from heaven. We ask all these things in your Son's holy name. Amen. And pledge to our flags. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. The next item on our agenda is the public forum. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person that would like to address the court this morning?
I would.
Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning?
Yes.
Seeing and hearing none, we'll move on to item number 5, which is the consent agenda. Noting that there are 6 items there, you may consider to approve the consent agenda as presented, or you may choose to select any or all of those to be discussed and considered individually.
I'm making a motion to approve the consent agenda A, B, C, D, E.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Mr. Basham, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 5? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 6 on the agenda is the road and bridge report. Mr. Latham.
Well, Joe, it's not much for the second part of the month. We're first cutting and sawing with our tree saw for the improvement of the pit. County Road 102, we got all the base hauled and they had to process 4 miles of that. 5.9 mile job, all the crazy pipes are in. We got a little concrete left on him. This is a group that's moved over to County Road one where they've been painting ditches and installing culverts to have the base approved. So probably about a month's time we'll get on County Road 100 installing base. Kind of been drafting up some stuff for County Road 274, which there's a presentation coming to garden that we're gonna move forward with doing something on that low water crossing in the summer. That being said, we probably have to cut out some paving projects, so those type things. That's really all I have.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any questions or comments for Mr. White from under the road bridge report?
I have none.
Okay. With the court's indulgence, because we've got some members here from Walker Partners to discuss an item, and we've got some other time constraints, I would ask that the court pick up with item number 10C under updating actions on grants to include but not limited to, and specifically C, the CDBG MIT and Walker Partners has some information. It's an update.
Well, good morning, Judge, and members of the Commissioner's Court. Thank you for having us. My name is Jacob Bell, Walker Partners. I'm Senior Vice President with NJ's Curtis Vidal and Jacob Henson. We've been working on this project for y'all And going back several years from the original grant, once the grant was awarded, we've begun in earnest the last few months really diving in. And Curtis is going to give the bulk of the technical presentation, and it'll be pretty brief. I believe y'all have handouts, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We'll be able to follow along, that's great. A couple of preliminary points of information. The way these grant projects work is when they're called for a grant, you have very little time and very little resources to develop a project. So you can do best scale what you have at the time, and then if the grant is awarded, then you have the time and the resources.
No, no.
Survey work, they take deep dives into the engineering. And as you do that, you start to uncover things. Sometimes things go as may have been anticipated, and sometimes things change, and we have to adjust. So this morning's update, and I believe y'all had a little bit of a sneak preview. You're going to hear that we've uncovered a few challenges, but we do have some solutions, as Justin already alluded to, and we'll go over those at the end. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Curtis, let him go through the technical part, and then towards the end, I'll jump back in and summarize the course.
Yeah. So on the second page for the background of the grant, the funding comes from the 2015 and 2016 flood events that got rolled up with Hurricane Harvey as well. And the county applied for the grant back in 2022. It wasn't awarded until June of last year, but it's a long process to get that grant funding from the federal government and applied locally. The next page is a summary of the awarded CDBG grant, which has got four different sites in it. There was about $390,000 awarded for the East Avenue Beach for grade improvements over at Copper's Cove, about $400,000 for the Shady Lake Culvert here at Gate City, about $700,000 for Baldnog Road, and $1.2 million for the County Road 374 well water crossing for a total of $2.7 million of construction. The total grant included engineering as well as grant administration and environmental that's being provided by Langford Community Services. So in terms of the schedule, we're scheduled to try to bid in August of this year. You know, even with the modification we're talking about today, I think we're still on track to come close to that. With construction plan from November 26 to November 27, and then the grant closeout term is at the end of January. There's two opportunities to request schedule extension through GLO if we need to. So I mean, if we need to do that, we can always extend that a little bit. In terms of the next slides, it goes through the four different project sites. The East Avenue B and Copper's Cove. Really, the city was talking about this intersection at Main Street and East Avenue B that does not drain well, which normally is not a problem, but back in 2021 during the winter storm, it froze solid 6 inches and was really a hazard to be able to get emergency crews across and to the north part of town. So draining that intersection will be a big benefit to them operationally. That area drains a total of about 10.5 acres, mostly from a couple of blocks there to the west and south at Avenue C and First Street. In the grant application, the next slide, basically we had proposed a 30-inch RCP pipe to go from that intersection 2 blocks down East Avenue B, and then discharge to a right-of-way that goes to an existing channel. As we got to looking at that, or initially we proposed that being behind the curb between that and the right-of-way, because there's no sidewalk there, but we found a number of utility conflicts with a water line and city sewer line in that right-of-way already, so our recommended alignment needed to shift over to the center of East Avenue B, which now includes, you know, the pavement repair for that. So that's what we've kind of found from our preliminary engineering so far. In terms of this next site at the Shady Lane crossing, it's got existing culverts there that are 8 feet wide by 4 feet tall and 8 feet wide by 2.5 feet tall. There is an existing water line, 6-inch water line that you can see in the photo there that's exposed. The city has to keep repairing that and rebuilding it when it gets washed out or damaged by debris. And then there's a sanitary sewer in the street as well that can be seen going through the bottom of the 8x4 culvert. So the next slide shows the drainage area at that location, which it drains, you know, kind of an order of magnitude more area than we were looking at in Copper's Cove, up to almost 240 acres. Really most of the triangle between US 84, State Highway 36, and Business 36. All that area comes under Business 36 and right through this little channel. In terms of what's in the grant application, the next we proposed a 20-foot wide by 5-foot tall precast concrete arch culvert. We've, you know, got our design flows now, and we're able to pass the 100-year without overtopping the roadway with a 24-foot wide by 7-foot tall culvert that we accomplished by excavating down 2 feet. So really keeping the street at the same elevation. The graphic here kind of shows the cross section of that proposed culvert with the various lines being the different frequency flood elevations. Because it passes the full 100-year overtopping or 100-year event without any overtopping, no water, low water crossing signs would be required at the site. The third side is the Bald Knob Bridge. So it's currently a bridge located along the north border of Fort Hood. It's 32 feet wide, and the current bridge opening passes a 5-year event, but events larger than that, you know, could easily damage the bridge and knock it out and require some time to get it reconstructed. There aren't any utilities, by the way, to cut the gas line along the downstream side. It's far enough away. In terms of the channel watershed, the next slide shows that it drains almost 5,500 acres, but that's all the partially populated area of Fort Hood. So when we ran the hydrology and got the flows and applied that to the hydraulic model, you know, our grant application, we had proposed a precast concrete arch culvert that was 32 feet wide by 10 feet tall. As we talked about that with the culvert supplier, they were pointing out that there's difficult logistics to get the semi trucks and the crane required to place that on site all the way down Bald Knob Road. So for that reason, we're recommending that we switch to a structural plate box culvert that can be brought in pieces and bolted together on site and then put together and backfilled. We do need to have a taller culvert as well, going from 10 feet up to 13 feet, which then providing to cover over the culvert requires raising the road by about 6 feet, which is really from the time that it turns in, it would be a little higher embankment until it goes back around the other side. That configuration passes the 25-year event without overtopping the road, which allows most of the residual risk to be dealt with without overtopping the road. And we still recommend low water crossing warning signs at the location if we can afford including that in the site. The fourth side is County Road 274, which is a main road from here to Cropper. It currently has three existing culverts that are 5 feet wide by 3 feet tall. and is not able to pass a two-year event, which would have a fifth event, as it would occur in any given year. Really, as we started looking at the watershed contributing to County Road 274, it's very large. I mean, another order of magnitude up there with 27,000 acres that goes all the way up to FM 247 between Jonesboro and Turnerville. So it is a sparsely populated rural area, but the size of the watershed is really large, which results in really high flows. The 100-year flow at the site is 28,000 CFS, and the 2-year flow is still like 7,000 CFS. So in the grant, we had proposed replacing those three smaller culverts with 2 30-foot wide by 6 feet tall culverts. We're hoping that that would, you know, be able to pass the 2-year or the 5-year event at least. As it turns out, it only passes 24% of the 2-year event and still has 8 feet of overtopping during the 2-year event. So we took a look at, you know, what it might cost to pass larger events. You know, passing the 5-year would be about a $7.5 million bridge. The 100-year would be up at $10.5 million. As we got to looking at it, I mean, the residual risk at this location is really very high. And so, you know, we're not sure that this proposed, or that the configuration proposed in the grant application is viable.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'll tag on that and then go into some of the dollar conversation. For us as licensed professional engineers and with a private consulting firm and having to push any design that we prepare through a CDBG grant, the standard of care is a term that's used that we have to meet. So we every drainage structure, we have to basically design it for what's called a design storm. That may be the 10-year storm or the 25-year storm that it completely passes that. And then we always have to check the 100-year. And the 100-year, you know, if it's within 1 or 2 feet over the road, that's something that could be mitigated, or maybe 2 or 3 feet with warning signs or things like that. But when it's, I believe it's 14 to 16 feet over the road, that's a whole other animal that we can't touch. The county has a lot more flexibility and immunity with respect to some of those legal limitations. And so as we looked at this, we're like, if we were to do this the way that our profession would say we should do it, right? Would say we should do it, it's a $8 to $10 million project, which obviously is way beyond the scope. When we started to see that, staff, and we also met with the grant administrators, and they said they agreed and nodded their heads in agreement that the grant administrators indicated that there was flexibility in moving funds around. So that was a good thing to hear. And as it turns out, as you turn the page, with some of the things that we've discovered, some of these improvements are going to cost more than we anticipated. And you have a spreadsheet there that has each site has a grant application column with the amounts estimated were, and then the far right column says current EOPCC, that's engineer's opinion, probable cost. And so the way I would say it is today, we're at around 25%. So we know way more than at the grant application stage, but there's still more work to go. And as we go, we could uncover more things that could improve these costs. There is some padding and contingency built into these costs. We could find things that make it cost more. We'll keep you updated. You'll notice that the total is about $125,000 more than what's allocated in the grant. We do not intend for that to be the case. Our goal is to work to balance that out and keep you informed. So we have a few ideas on how we may be able to do that. There's some utilities and the Gatesville project, for example. Maybe we talk to the city about that. There's we can do the county possibly could self-perform a few items, and that can bring that down. We can get creative in the way we bid the project out. We can include alternate bids, and that basically allows you flexibility at bid time to say, okay, we want, as an example, the project in Copper's Cove, We were calling for a 30-inch pipe down the road. Well, we could specify an 18-inch pipe, which would do the job of draining the bathtub of that intersection that holds water. It just wouldn't drain it as quickly in larger events. But in that situation, there's not a major safety threat there. We have to positive outlet, so we can bid it as 18 and do an alternate for 30-inch. And at bid award time, y'all and the city of Crawford Cove can make choices. So we feel like they're basically now where we're at is within 5% grant. So we feel really good about that. And as we proceed with the further phases of design, we have a preliminary design milestone coming up. We'll do a cost check. Then we'll have final design. We'll do another cost check. And then we'll have the actual bids, what the industry tells us will be. That would be the real numbers. So all that said, our proposal, the main decision I think that has to be made today is County Road 274. That's just something that's beyond the scope of this grant. And again, in visiting with the grant administrators, they said that those funds, they basically look at the total of the construction. What's interesting is that is the one site that had the hardest time making it into the grant to begin with because of some of the income levels in that area. And so the grant administrator said that this will probably be a pretty easy amendment if Road 274 is taken out. So that is the presentation. We are happy to answer any questions, or Justin may have feedback as well.
Pretty clear. That's what I was talking about in our leadership. You know, obviously the county came before the $10 million bridge.
Right.
We're going to go build a little water crossing back somewhere to what was there.
And, you know, I think you're getting the magnitude of, I know TxDOT does a lot of off-system projects, and I don't know much of us yet, but TxDOT is here, but it may be worthwhile to pick up that conversation if this location continues to be a concern, because that is what I always see done as an off-system bridge project. Somehow there's some partnership with the local state funds. So that could be achieved. That may be a possible path forward on a long-term solution for that location.
Do we need to act?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if that's something y'all need to act on removing 274 from the grant, or just if that's a head nod towards the grant administrators proceeding with that.
I think to be able to clearly and effectively communicate with the grant administrators so that they can start working this with the GLO to get that amendment, we're going to have to take an action. And I think it's very, very clear to me that 274 is not, it's not a viable project under this. Under, you know, I mean, even if we took the other three away and put everything at this one, we're not even meeting half the cost of 274. With that, it does enable us to still do the Bald Knob Road in the county's aspect, and certainly that is the most expensive project remaining on the list, and it covers most of the cost of Shady Lane as well as East Avenue B, and then again working with Walker Partners and communicating with the city of Coppers Cove. Their desires and intents from, you know, I think it's the big question there is the 18-inch versus the 30-inch. And I mean, I think they should have some input on that and what that, you know, cost reflects. And then, of course, with the city of Gatesville, there's the potential that they could do their own relocation of utilities, do some in-house work that, again, when we put the bid packet out, those are some things that could potentially be some cost savings out of the 123 delta that we're looking at currently between what was awarded for grant purposes versus what is our current projected cost. I'm not going to tell you I can look into the future, but we're only about 4 or 5 months out from bidding this out. I don't think that there would be tremendous variances in our cost estimates in a 4 to 5 months period. That could happen, I mean, you know, a lot, you know, there's lots of
yes, sir.
Coulda, wouldas out there.
I would maybe the asterisk I would put on that is these sites are each very unique, relatively small, and have their own complexities. And sometimes, you know, when we go to bid, contractors have been on their hunger or not. Sometimes they'll give us really competitive prices on projects like that. Sometimes they'll look at them as a one off and it costs a little more. I mean, Curtis mentioned some of the mobilization to get some of the equipment and material. So that's how we're communicating with the industry on this, but on bid day, you never know. But that is the final price, right? That's what you get the contractor. So.
You guys had mentioned, and Curtis was talking about, if we can move forward and build low water cross on 274, if there was any money left in the grant, could we put a warning system for the low water cross on? Is that an option we could?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of options with that, Justin, because we have talked about that. First off, if there's some money left over magically, that the county could use that as to, if you wanted, you know, you're obviously going to sell performance forms, so maybe some of the riprap or grading or whatever, you paper, some of the material, really that. Another option, my understanding is there's another grant going on that y'all have for, and you could use it for a low water crossing warning system.
Okay.
But I also understand the grant, the county pursuing a grant for, I thought Judy indicates y'all have a good chance that would be a county-wide warning system.
It is in the hazard mitigation grant. Plan, the action plan, as one of the actions to be able to install a low water crossing warning system for $37,000, I think, at each site.
So there may be a couple of options.
Okay. Yeah. It
seems like we're going to move forward from moving from there, but if we could just maybe potentially leave that on there if there's any money left afterwards.
Yeah. And it's very important for visitors. I mean, residents kind of know, hey, don't go around there if it's, you know, but yeah. It's the people that, you know, are passing through, or the, I mean, unfamiliar, this unfortunately could be impacted.
If that's simple, if it's not,
right. We can work that together, and also with Langford.
Be my only request, Judge, if there was a way to. We're going to build a low water crossing there this summer. We could get a help with the warning system. It's something we've never done, and you know, that would be nice. So. If the money's there.
Yeah, I was going to say, so should we leave it on there at zero?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here going.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk to the grant administrators. I think the move is going to be to remove it from the project, and then technically you couldn't. But we talked about force account money being available, so maybe that money be allocated. That's what we would have been talking about with the grant administrators.
Yeah, so it might not technically be left on the paper, but then
right.
The remainder of
right.
It could be.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm hearing back. I'm Brianna from Langford. And so we do have a little bit of flexibility on time as far as being able to, when we want to remove that project. So we can leave it in there until we have better numbers and have a better idea of what we want to do. And we do have an email into GLO right now to see if the barrier arms and potentially the warning light system is an option.
Okay. Right now, I'm glad to hear. I never let you step in. So. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. In the back, it was a little hard for me to get out.
Judge, not to butt into this one, it's not in our grant, but you recall that we actually have money in the grant that we have for warning science and systems, and the county, we decided not to put it in because of the location we're thinking about. They probably, Justin pointed out, they probably wouldn't last very long. People pulling tractors and plows and things down the road. But we have some funds available already in the Blackland. There was an allotment in there for that. So I think we would not be out of line to work with the county to maybe, if that's helpful, maybe save a little money to put some of those dollars into that.
I think it's tremendously helpful. Because what did you say? Projected cost about $37,000?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Okay. Action plan.
We've never done
that. I think that's basically for warning signs. I'm not sure about the gate arms. Those are quite a bit more expensive.
Yeah, and I think rust, flashing lights would be best. You've got arms there, they're going to get destroyed.
Most communities use the flashing lights until you know, police can get out there and place barricades. Yeah. So it's not a replacement for barricades. It's just for that period of time until they can get there, you know. So.
All right. Mr. Manning, you think that 37 is a reasonable number that would that's available?
I realize I'm way out of my wheelhouse. I just we've got a chunk of money in the grant set aside for that, and we haven't used much of it. Most of the places where we're going to go are on very narrow right-of-ways, and it's just as not nearly all the counties have the same issue that putting those signs in most of those locations probably not going to last. So I would check and see how much money we have, and if it's helpful, I know we have some funds.
Yeah.
And then I'm more than happy to work with whoever to see if we can stretch those dollars with them.
Our advice would be the signs be located a little further up the hill.
Yeah. I think the highway is not very good. If we can get on the hill at somebody's place, I think we're great with that.
Yeah. And as y'all guys work towards that, just let us know.
Okay.
Found some ideas back forward.
That sounds like it'd be somewhere to just remove it from this.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
I think from our standpoint to communicate with Langford, Brianna, in communicating with the GLO, I don't think that the, you know, leaving that as an open project, you know.
Create too
much. Yes. So I think that streamlines, we've reduced from four projects to three, reallocation of those funds, and then we'll pick up with mitigation through a couple of other avenues that we have available to us. And then as this winds down, I think they've proposed a very reasonable, if we come in, you know, somewhere below and we've got some excess, then that's where we used it forced account to reimburse the county for some of our efforts. Does that? Does that sound plausible to the court?
Langford, are you fairly in agreement with that? Go ahead and let's remove that. We can always use the force account.
Correct. Right. Okay. So if we, it might be best for us to leave a little money in there. Like we could do something small, like let's build in some small force account there. Because once we remove it, it'll be hard to put it back unless we're able to do work at another site. So like if you're going to shift it to one of the other sites and that's where you want to put your force account money into, then that would work. But if we take out that whole site, it's going to be really hard for us to put it back. But we could come up with something just to leave it in, even if we don't end up doing that.
Even if it was 37,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's a conditional action that you take. They talk with GLO and they say, well, there's no chance of that. They approve the project. But if there's the merit to leaving it, and if there's money left over, force account funds can be used, and it would be beneficial to leave it. So
I think that'd be good.
I don't know if you can make an action like that. That gets too confusing, but it seems like you have a couple of ways this could go, and we just plan for spending a little more time working with GLO to figure that out.
Thank you. First place the force account on Baldnob Road for 274.
That's kind of what I was thinking, because I mean if I'm sitting in Austin in the GLO office and you tell me you're putting $37,000 towards a $7.5 million project, that's going to raise the eyebrows. If we just add an amount, whatever you determine, for a forced account on the Bald Knob Road, then that's directly tied to the county. We would have direct reimbursement on that and not have to worry about, you know, one of the other projects going through the city of Gatesville or even the city of Coppers Cove to get their accounting for that reimbursement.
So in other words, you can more easily play a shell game on your end of overrunning one side or underrunning another in-house and figure that out than through GLO.
Absolutely.
And really, when we get the construction bids in, we'll know exactly where we are on that.
Yes.
So will these be bid out as separate projects, Curtis, or will they be a package?
It would be all one package. I'm going to try to get economy of scale. You know. Jacob said, they're kind of small.
Two of them are very similar.
Yeah.
And the one on Fulton off there, potential for a, if we can't get in within the bid numbers, the embankment bill on that, that would be something the county has resources on.
Yeah, I've thought about demolition, grading, fill, road base. Yeah, I think there's some a lot that we're going to do.
When will you guys sit down and start packaging those at all?
That we'll be doing that during the final design. Yeah. Okay, so as we give you updates, we'll talk through those with you.
All right.
All right, so again, this is outside of my wheelhouse a bit. But I want to make sure, since we have the experts in the room, you know, because it's in my precinct, so I'm going to unfortunately have to make a motion to probably eliminate this project. That does not make me happy.
Sure.
That all makes sense to you now? Okay, that we could go ahead and remove this, put the money elsewhere. And Justin, you're good with that?
I don't see us having another option, honestly.
Yeah.
Because the price of the... We're just going to have three odd things in our current budget to rebuild up this summer is our goal.
Right. Okay. Talk about that. All right. Better.
I have a few questions, Judge, about the projects in general, not about 274.
I think this is the appropriate time to ask.
East Avenue B, you mentioned that we're about to move a bunch of water from one location to another much more rapidly than it previously moved, that some of it didn't move at all. In our previous discussion, when we were trying to determine the LMI and the beneficial area of this project, we talked a lot about the downstream from Avenue B back down towards South Drive, back down through there. There's a drainage runs backyards, all those houses back down through there, and all this water, 4th Street, dead ends in East Avenue B there, and there's an area of open country that's called the Housing Authority of Garfield Cove, where this water, some of this water already ends up, and we're about to put a whole lot more there, a whole lot quicker, but I don't see anything in the plans about improving that area to hold and dissipate this water in a fashion to prevent it going downstream much more rapidly.
Yes, sir. So we haven't gotten to that phase of design, but in the cost estimates, we've included some provisions. So the two things we'll do is we'll check the downstream channel sections to understand their capacity. And then also we will, I think you can do it in a couple of different ways between the slope of the pipe, the size of the pipe, and either rock for graph or dissipators. We can do some things if there are high velocities coming up.
So if y'all talk to the Garfield Cove about that open area there, is that something they have control over that y'all are going to be able to have?
We had proposed like a constructing an actual detention pond in their right of way, and they didn't really want the detention pond in the right of way. But you know, the more we think about it, the timing of the hydrographs may, if the hydrograph coming off the intersection may be a lot faster than the main hydrograph coming into that ditch. And we'll kind of confirm that.
So in other words, getting that water out faster may actually be a benefit.
If it gets
out
right,
the rest of the basin longer to get there.
Before the overall feed comes through it. So we'll evaluate that.
Y'all don't know whether or not the city of Garfield has control with that piece of property that's a housing authority.
I think they do have the 4th Street right of way that comes
straight all the way through.
I think it comes over at least half.
But let us verify.
But
okay, double check.
So I noticed on y'all's checklist it says LMI check down through there. So are we not going to have, hopefully the engineer's person would know, we're not going to have to revisit that issue about beneficial?
Yeah, you will not. This actually makes the beneficiaries look better because we get a higher percentage by reducing the one to half a little bit.
But there would be a public hearing required, is that?
Yes, because we're removing
because the for the change for the grant.
Correct.
So that's
there's a potential change, so we will have to do a public hearing at a later date, but it's a good idea when we have that public hearing to have a firm plan as far as what we want to do with those funds that we're removing.
Okay.
And we're getting there, but I just wouldn't say it's appropriate.
Okay, Baldon Road. When are we going to know if we're going to need additional right of way for this raising this road bed 6 foot?
Well, that we should know that within the next coming weeks. Question: I don't know if do y'all have dedicated right of way for that now, or is that a prescriptive right of way?
I'm going to reserve my answer to that question for a later date.
We mowed the fences.
Let's just stick with when do you think I don't know.
I would say that during the design process next month or two.
Okay.
So, and we will stay.
Sooner the better.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
6 foot elevation, is it mainly going to be on the east side? Is that where that?
Well, that would be right at the bridge, I mean.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's.
In that corner. Well, it blows over the road on the east side.
It's probably pretty quick over there.
It comes back down into the slough, and that's what washes out.
And we'll also try to figure out if we can do a small culvert in that area. We'll go about that.
Yeah, I think right now, maybe that's probably a 15 each, but should have a 48 each there. Yeah.
That's all I had to
do. Okay, thank you, Mr. Bell. Any other questions or comments, discussion points from the court? Is there an action that the court wishes to take?
Well, unfortunately, based upon the expert's opinions today, I make a motion to remove County Road 274 low water crossing from the CDBG-DR grant.
We've got a motion to remove County Road 274 low water crossing from the CDBG-MIT grant from Commissioner Weddle, a second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion on this item under 10C of our agenda today? Brianna, does that give you enough guidance and flexibility to engage with the GLO for correcting that? And are our engineers comfortable with,
yes, sir,
with
sir.
How we move forward with that? Okay, very good. One last opportunity, any other comments? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Mr. Bell, Mr. Beadle, thank you so much for
thank you all very much
for being here this morning. We appreciate that, really do. And Brianna, thank you as well.
Yeah, John, mention these. Okay.
Do you want an alibi? Do we need to go back and revisit the item number 6 one more time? I think that would be appropriate. Ms. Loon, do you need an action for that, or are you comfortable with just filing those under the Road and Bridge report? Okay. All right. Very good. All right. We'll go back and we'll pick up with item number 7 on the agenda, which is to consider West Moody Farms' proposed replat, an item that had previously been tabled by the court. Mr. Mannix, any additional information, updates? To provide for the court?
No, Judge. I think they've built everything that's required for our regulations for the replat.
This one was in my precinct. This was the new guys, but they do a thing by our subdivision regulations, so I'll make a motion to approve West Moody Farms' proposed replat.
We've got a motion to approve the proposed replat from Commissioner Basham. We got a second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion under item number 7? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries.
Judge, if nobody complains, can we move down to the fire department stuff? Extreme winds today. and got at least three departments here. If we can move on with theirs and get it knocked out, you know, if they have any discussion or anything, I think we've been decent.
Yeah, there should be no burning today.
I That's agree.
State statute.
I agree.
Is it?
But not a fire yet. But fires do start when there's no burning.
Do you want to go to item number 12 and then 14, or do you want to go just? Okay.
Then I'm okay with that. I'm
fine with that. All right. So we will move to item number 12 on the agenda, which is to consider updated agreements with local fire departments. After a couple of meetings that we had, we took the old agreement, deleted some language, deleted several outdated acronyms, updated acronyms, refined the audit process, and I've provided to you both redlined version as well as a clean version for your consideration. I've passed out a couple of those to the fire departments as well to reflect the notes that I had taken in those meetings. And again, there is one copy there, provided that the court approves that, then that same format will transition into the proper naming convention for all of our fire departments, which I do have currently, as well as the amounts that have been allocated based off of our budget.
I'd make a motion to agree to the update to the local fire department.
Second. Statement.
Okay, we got the second stereo. Who y'all gonna flip a coin? Okay,
I had one question to make sure. I know, Mr. Belt, you were very involved up front, you know, with this. I guess we got this at 8:21 this morning. Or eight, yeah. You've reviewed them. We're all good. All the verbiage and everything. Past your, I guess you're the red line guy, probably.
Oh, sir.
Okay.
I am the red line guy.
Oh.
It fits with the notes that we, I was there at the meeting, and it fits with the notes. Yeah, yeah.
Did y'all read over it?
I haven't read it. I'll
read it some of it. I read it today. There you go.
Commissioner Middle, the only two things that cause me concern that are not addressed in the firefighter agreements are there's nothing in the agreements that requires the fire departments to maintain their entity status, and there is nothing in the agreements that require them to provide the county with W-9s with their taxpayer identification number prior to the issuance of funds. I think that those two things are very important, and that's after groups look fine to me. I don't know if they're all in good standing now. I don't know if the names are correct on all of the agreements, as the entities are named on their official documents, but I think that's probably, we've probably talked about that enough, that's right now, so feel okay about that. I assume that they've all gotten in good standing with Secretary of State's office and the Comptroller's office, but I have not done to check them all because there's, you know, however many of them there is. And I have not gone through and checked every one of them. I know some of them are because they have told me and I have double checked, but some of them I have not heard anything from. This is fine. I don't need to hear from all of them. Y'all do. So but I think those two things are very important. I think their entity status must remain in good standing, and I think they should provide a W-9 to the county just like every other person who paid money to. I think when we checked a while back, they found two W-9s that had been provided to the county in the past, but they didn't request them. So, you know, that's not surprising. They didn't find a couple because I don't think we'd arrest them for it.
Mm-hmm.
move this process ahead for the fire department. Is that something on the motion that we could add to?
Yes. This agreement could be amended by the court, and then the agreement would then be presented to each of the fire departments for their signature. So they could either choose to sign that, if you wish to add the requirement of the submission of a W-9, we can do that under
I only got one question as to Mr. Belt's request is we were told when we got our stuff to give it to you or to send it up to the lady up here in front, and nobody told us to send it to him. So, I mean, who's going to be responsible for checking the fire departments for their comptroller, their state of, and W-9s?
The Office of the County Judge, and I will then clear all that information through the county attorney. So that you've got one common place to go to. That's the whole point, is the Office of the County Judge. And then I will confer and distribute the information that I have so that they can all see what we have, what's been submitted, and if there's any issues with that, they can address it with me, and I'll address it with you.
Okay. Well, as you well know, I've sent everything strictly to you.
Yes, sir.
We're just making sure we're going down the right rabbit hole.
Yes, sir.
The word doesn't need to be added in, then.
It says in Article 5, the department shall observe and comply with all federal, state, and local laws, rules, ordinances, and regulations in any manner affecting the conduct of the services herein provided in performance of all obligations undertaken by this agreement. I think that that paragraph is most directly related to the provision of fire protection services, not all federal, state, and local laws, rules, ordinances, and regulations. I think we all agree, and I think the fire departments agree that they shall observe all federal, state, and local laws, rules, and ordinances, and regulations, just like all of us are required to. Them knowing that.
That a W-9 would be required under paragraph 5.
And the law is crystal clear that they've amended it over the last few years. So, they changed all the 1099 rules, they changed all the W-9 rules. It's crystal clear. We shouldn't be paying any vendor a penny without having a W-9 on. Just the rules. I didn't make them up. I didn't make up the rules. The Secretary of State's office is supposed to keep the entity in good standing with 5 year press forward, like it's supposed to either. State law says you're supposed to. If you're not going to do it, then I'm not sure we ought to be sending any taxpayer dollars. Like I said before, I'm tired of taking butt chins for things I don't have any control over.
So prior to issuing the any checks, any funding, we would require a W-9 to be submitted. Yes, ma'am.
Christina Tatum from Levada Volunteer Fire Department. I would just offer for the court to recognize that there's transitions of leadership in volunteer fire departments at any given time. And so it feels as though the goalpost continues to move. I don't think that there's, at least I'll speak for our department, there's no issue with compliance or desiring to comply. But when directions are not provided to do certain tasks successfully, that makes that really hard. So what might be coming to the court as not wanting to comply, it's also not knowing how to comply. And I would say thank you to Commissioner Matthews for working with me on what was a very cumbersome process with the Secretary of State, not because we don't want to do it, but just because it's not clear. So I think with any of these things, if you need a W-9, I can get it to you in an hour. We want to comply, but it just feels as though we're not necessarily being given the information to complete the tasks that you all want us to complete in a timely manner. So just wanted to offer that.
Well, we'll take it. All right, so technically W-9s could be covered under paragraph 5.
And the entity status?
I've got, I think I've got everybody's updated. There was one that was an application, and I think there are 7, 8 others, I forget the number, that reflect that they have a current status with the Secretary of State, either by 802 or a printout of their entity ID number under the Secretary of State that says that they're active. And I've accepted either one of those.
So that's in this contract.
That would be under that, 5.
That should be in.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the fire department as well, so I know where y'all are coming from.
I think if we could get this wrote out, where maybe add on the back page something that has to be done, so they can post it in their station. So, like she said, if they change hands, sometimes the hand changes is not a good deal, because you're the one leaving is told to leave.
Yeah, here's your keys.
And if we got a checklist somehow that they could post in a board or whatever at their station, no matter who comes in, they can look at it and say, we got to get all this done. I'm just trying to keep it simple. And that, I mean, I've seen it happen where the chief, the assistant chief, and the secretary all leave at the same time, and then the ones that roll up, they have no clue where they're at. Some forcibly removed, some involuntarily removed.
I do not mind working on a checklist of all the items that break things down. But I think that would be, in addition to the agreement, but it would mirror what we're asking for in the agreement.
Yeah. And I know I've talked to several in my precinct, but we didn't even have a copy of the contract they signed. So I strongly suggest that if you sign that contract, keep it and put it in a file somewhere.
Well, if I may, just a step further, a checklist of what needs to be submitted is one thing. Directions as to how to complete it is another. So I think that to understand clearly what you need from us and at what step in the process puts us in a green light to receive a check. Because I think that's the challenge, is that there are departments in this county that do not have fundraising outside of county money, who are now at a point at the end of February where their bank accounts are really scary. And so I think that that's where the issue lies, is that I think everyone wants to be compliant, but if there's red tape and bureaucracy in terms of the website that we're trying to submit it to, I think we've got our priorities mixed up.
I think a lot of that, I mean, if you keep the contract and you read it, and then he gets the spreadsheet out, like you, the checklist, print off whatever's on that checklist.
Sure.
And worst case scenario, drop it back. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but it's stuff like that where you can't submit it in person. You have to submit it on an online portal. And
yeah.
Good.
Well, we can't help you with the state website. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that, like, there's people here who are tech savvy who are spending 6 to 8 hours trying to get a form submitted, and And then, yeah, once it's submitted, we still haven't received a check. So it's just, it's a challenging position to be in.
If it gets submitted, it gets rejected, and you have to start all over.
It's really
hard. Yeah, well, we can't control that part of it. I wish we could, but.
Judge, me and you've talked about the whole federal income tax issue. I mean, it's going to be an issue, or it could be an issue for every one of these entities. I don't know who's filing 990 informational returns with IRS and who's not. I don't know who has submitted a application for tax exemption and got the forward letter. I know some of them have because they're exempt from the public information report requirements of the Secretary of State's office in regards to their franchise account status, because they have submitted that forward letter from the IRS for tax exempt status. But we're giving, the Corio County is taking money from the taxpayers and giving to volunteer fire departments. The least amount is $39,288.81. The most is $190,000. So it isn't the old days where they were getting $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 from us. And we have begun to get asked questions about things, and we need to have answers. And as I previously mentioned, I'm tired of taking butt chews about things I don't have any control over. And when people want to know why I, as county attorney, am allowing the Corio County Commissioner's Court to give $70,000 to somebody that is not in good standing and hasn't filed this and hasn't filed that, I don't like that very much, because I don't have a very good answer. My answer is, I don't know. I'll have to look and see. Because until the other day, when I checked all of them on the Secretary of State's website, I had never checked them, not one time, in the last 20 years. I'll be ashamed of myself, but it ain't going to happen again between now and October 2027, I promise you. And so, they may all be mad at me. I don't care. Vote against me in the next election. But we're going to tend to our business from here on out. Nobody's getting a pass on nothing. I'm fed up.
No, I understand your concerns, and I think they're valid and they're warranted. And as we discussed when we met with the chiefs, is that because there were going to be new requirements that they may not have had placed on them previously, that we were going to work off of the current agreement to make modifications to it, with the understanding that there would be a next level of financial transparency going into FY27. I believe that's what we discussed in that meeting.
I'm having trouble.
And I got a text from somebody in the volunteer fire department. Says we are not required to report to SFFMA and need to be. So I'm really not really aware of what that. There's anybody
state that fire could,
that's
fighters
and that's state fire firemen, firefighters, Texas, and the only requirement is that the fire department has to be a member. It doesn't say you have to have your whole fire department. It doesn't say anything about you have to report your training or any of that. You just have to be a member.
We discussed that.
Say something about it, though.
Well, let me. Okay, we discussed the SFFMA in that fire chief's meeting, and the consensus was that the language would be that you have to be a member
in good standing.
In good standing. It did not say you had to do all of your reporting for all of your individuals through that. However, if they do report, that program allows them to keep track of all of their training if they update that.
I hate to interrupt you, but that's not what this says. Because now it says must have a training coordinator,
correct,
comma, and must have a training program under SFFMA.
That is correct.
It doesn't say it has to be a member. It must just, I read they must have a training program that complies with the rules of that 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 organization sets out.
That is exactly what the fire chiefs expressed to me. There's no deviation, and I've given them the red line, so they've seen this language.
But you're going to say that, you're going to say that I'll never talk to you about this.
Then. Well, you are one after that meeting. You after the meeting, Mr. Sanders.
That's money.
Money.
Can I speak?
Well, I'll give you an opportunity.
Okay, go right ahead.
But you spoke to me individually after the what was discussed in the meeting with all of the chiefs. So I made no adjustments to this agreement based off of one conversation with one chief because all of the other chiefs were not privy to that information. So what you're seeing, what has been delivered to the court is exactly verbatim from what was the notes I took. I believe Commissioner Matthews could verify that. And the red line copies that you see out there, there's no discrepancies from the chief's meeting that I sat in on and I took notes.
So is that an accurate statement that y'all
there was a discussion about that?
Must have a training program under SFFMA.
Everybody should have a training program.
Everybody has
a training program. If you use the codes from SFFMA to report your thing.
Okay.
But we also report our training on our new program. And the only reason you reported on SFFMA is if you eventually wanted to become a certified firefighter, then your training would be in SFFMA. You've always had to have a training for
that. SFFMA, you're reporting in there, if you have a LODD, which is a loss of duty death, they can go back, they can come back to you and ask you what training did that individual have. You can't, the service we're using now for reporting, most of these people can't even get trained. So it's not being reported in that system. But if you report that into SFFMA, they have a copy of that that stays on files for years. And if something happens, the legalities of a fire department or a county could be at end to the fact that there was not proof that this individual was trained to go into that house. That's the thing that we do. Now, if you're not going to require them, then every department, I'm paying $1,400 to put my training into SFFMA for my guys. So the departments that are not, they're paying $200 and $50 for a coordinator. And that's just okay. And then the rest of the money, they're just spending wherever. But the fact is, I still believe that this taxpayers' money is coming to us. We should afford every opportunity to utilize that money where we can.
I think what they're trying to say is that the State Department Association is like, we need to provide them with 48 hours of training no matter what. Now, if Alan comes to me and he gets only 2 hours, that's honestly, but I need to reinforce that 2 hours too. And we do that. I mean, that's just natural for us to do that, for my department to do that. So, if Mr. Bell came to our department and got training, and we would report that he had 2 hours of training. But that, I mean, that just makes sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense not to give him credit for showing up. Because if somebody is working on a certified firefighter, but we don't hold it against them either because of it, if they don't. So this the department has to offer 48 hours.
And that's the only requirement. You have to do 48 hours a month or something. 48 hours. About the day, I went in there. I got to look up my records. And they had the program so much, my records were fine.
We took 20 years to get to this point, you know, of just letting this, you know, one, I mean, just me personally, I commend all you guys for, you know, sticking with us. It wasn't anybody's, I don't think it's anybody's fault. It's just this what's happened over years and years and years of, yes.
Stuff just fell through the cracks.
Yeah, and so now we've identified it. In my opinion, now after hearing everything, I think we have a very solid, although I have not reviewed it extensively, but it sounds like we have a very solid working document. They're never perfect. Sometimes you have to enact them, get them moving, and we can always amend at a very short time later date if we find any issues in it. But I think, you know, in my opinion today, I came in today knowing that we have to get something done today. And now I feel pretty good that we have a good, solid working document that meets maybe 90%+. As long as you guys continue to stay engaged, you know, just from my standpoint, all we're trying to do is fulfill our obligation, right? I mean, we answer you and every other taxpayer. But that's I think how this all came about. I feel pretty good now. I think we have a motion and I don't even remember who made the motion.
Commissioner Mason.
Matthews.
Monday board made it right.
I think he's working on it.
I would amend it that we approve the agreement with the local fire departments and include a checklist attached to this document that refers to section B or 5 that the department is required to stay in compliance with federal, state, local rules, ordinance, regulations.
And I'll second that.
Okay, so the motion is to approve the amended agreement with the addition of including a checklist to support paragraph 5. Okay. Motion from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 12? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Moving on to item number 14, which was to consider a burn ban. I believe.
I asked to put it on here. Talked with a bunch of different departments. We got a lot of fuel on the ground. I understand some people don't like putting burn bans on. I don't necessarily like putting burn bans on either. But unfortunately, sometimes it's necessary evil, kind of like the control burn that got out of control the other day. I mean, I think there were some professionals out there, but it got out. So my motion would be to enact a burn ban, court order CC 26-4.
We've got a motion to implement a burn ban under court order CC 26-01 from Commissioner Matthews.
Second.
A second from Commissioner Taylor.
I always like to get a little public involvement since we have most of the fire chiefs here. Would it be appropriate if you guys give me a show of hands, or they think we need to enact a burn ban from all the fire chiefs. Okay, so I got a majority in my mind. Okay.
Commissioner, I'm just an elaborate question. Yesterday we were out on the fire. We've got that 28. Prior to that, they were out on one. How big was that other one over?
Oh, it was about five. Was yours kind of the Oglesby way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I saw that coming home about
all
6 o'clock last night. Yeah. Okay. I saw it and all the smoke. I knew it was pretty good size.
And then last week they were several others on the western part of camp.
Yeah. We're always very sensitive to burn bans, guys, because we get all kinds of.
Well, just in terms of call volume, I mean, if you look at like year over year call volume, we're up significantly over last year at this time. So.
All right. Thank you.
One of the issues that I believe that we need to address in the very near future is that, you know, there's a difference between a wildfire, a fire that's started accidentally, unintentionally, that falls into one category. A couple of weeks ago, I checked with the sheriff's department, and this covered like the first 10 or 12 days of February. There had been 18 fire calls, or 18 calls. 11 of those were wildfires, listed as wildfires. And out of that 11, 8 of them had been started intentionally by somebody burning brush. There are state statutes that outline what is required to burn brush, even in the unincorporated areas. And we're turning a blind eye to those individuals who are not complying with the state statutes. And we send our fire departments out on fire calls for fires that are started intentionally. Now, there was an incident where a guy was mowing some tall grass with his zero-turn mower, got off of it to take care of something. It caught some grass on fire and it spread to some hay bales. That is an accidental fire. There's nothing that I think that person did irresponsibly. But when somebody intentionally lights something, if it's against someone else's property, we call that arson. It's against their own property and they're burning up their own stuff. This court needs to address that, because inherently a burn ban places restrictions on property owners as a whole when some people know how to burn responsibly and others don't, but we're all penalized for it, or we all fall into the same restriction. So I'm not opposed to a burn ban at this time, but the next part of this needs to be, what do we do to ensure that those people that do not know how to burn responsibly are held accountable, and those that do burn responsibly are permitted to do so? I'll get off my high horse. I will allow any other comments. Have I misrepresented the picture of the first part of this month in any way about describing those fires? Okay. I mean, I just wanted to make sure that I was clearly articulating this, because our problem isn't with wildfires just happening. Our problem is with our citizens burning irresponsibly. So with that, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion from the court? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. So that everyone is clear, this burn ban for today, we are under a state mandated, you do not burn, because winds are anticipated to exceed 23 miles an hour. Given this order, it is effective at sunrise tomorrow. So there should be no outdoor burning today, and we should fall under a burn ban effective tomorrow morning. And we'll get signed copies of this emailed out to y'all, so y'all will have that, as well as the sheriff's department. I'm sorry?
When will we sign our contract?
As soon as I can get them done after we complete this meeting, I'll blast out. We'll do phone calls. So if I can get you by here today or tomorrow at the latest, tomorrow would be the latest to be able to come by and get those. But Bill snuck in from he took a break from the voting. Running the whole voting operation in Coryell County, he put on his firefighter hat, administrator hat. So, okay. And thank y'all for being here. Okay. That covers 12 and 14. Picking back up with number 8, which is to consider accepting the ranches at Buena Vista acknowledgement to vacate a plat. I believe they have submitted some documentation to vacate that particular plat that went out in your packet. I believe the advice of counsel was that so that this court has a record of taking an action to accept the instrument to vacate a plat that has been filed with the county clerk.
I'd make a motion to accept the branches at Winnebago acknowledgement to vacate the plat.
We've got a motion to accept the instrument to vacate plat from Commissioner Matthews. Second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 8? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 9 is discussion and consideration of transition of IT services. Mr. Weddle, I'll let you take the lead on this, if that's all right.
Really, there's not. I mean, it's a pretty dead week as far as, you know, what they're doing. We discussed last time moving the RSOC to San Angelo. I think that's, you know, in process. They are also, Sam Goldsmith, you'll put it last time. They're trying to get a bunch, you know, some savings for us and then come back to us and talk to us about project. I mean, really, it's a pretty dead week as far as that goes. And I don't have my notes in front of me.
My biggest takeaway from our last meeting was that, and they've got a work order in with Lumen, Brightspeed, whoever they're calling themselves today. We have latency issues or delay issues within our network connection, our main connections coming in. That right now is triggering some resets within the RDS system overall. I would say the vast majority of the service tickets that I have reviewed deal with being dropped from RDS, having to re-sign in or can't get re-signed in. Still a handful of computer devices out there that still need to be brought into the system overall, but we're starting to hit more of a steady state operation. The first biggest transition I think that we're going through right now, which will hit us in the 1st of March, is the implementation of eForce and how that integrates. There's still a few outlying issues with TLETs and getting some of those devices transferred over. I believe there's one within the Sheriff's Department, and there's one that's assigned to the DA that's currently housed in this building. So they are progressively working on not only getting to a steady state operation, but identifying some issues within our current structure and trying to resolve those overall. And then as we've identified programs that will be implemented, they're working with those departments to be able to do that as well. And that's really,
yeah.
I mean, have I, did I? But subject to any of your questions.
Does the I did not make the last meeting, but I did talk to Mr. Goldsmith at length the other day about just called hardware issues moving forward. And you know, I know that y'all talked about that at the meeting a little bit, but I think as we move forward here, I think we ought to do it the next 30 to 45 days, not wait 60 or 90 days, because then we'll be right on top of budget stuff and everything else. But I think we can get them in 30 or 45 days and really sit down and look at a plan for, you know, which, because we've got some big groups of equipment that we're going to have to upgrade or replace. And I don't know what it's going to cost. And I don't know how big the groups are. I don't know what they found. I know some of what they found, but I don't have a good handle on that. I know y'all don't either. So do that before we bail off in the budget season. And I talked to Sam about that the other day. But I think that's the next big thing coming is, you know, they're working out all these little, what I call little issues, just day-to-day stuff that happens. Yes, I get all the tickets too, but I know what you're saying. There's all kinds of things having brick issues.
somebody gets dropped off RDS, and somebody needs some USBs, and battery backup in the camera system with courthouses needs replaced. So, you know, that's just the last beat.
Yeah.
But we're going to have some big ticket items we're going to have to consider, and of course, we're going to have to think about how they're going to handle those or finance those. I have an opinion, but I want to make decisions. Y'all need to be educated. Coming down there. That's the next big thing I see coming, I think, wise. We're going to need them. I'm talking about.
And you're mainly talking about replacement of computers. That you've been championing that we've got a lot of old systems out there, and we've got to get on a, you know, kind of like we talked about with the road and bridge trucks and sheriff vehicles, we need to get on a system where we're replacing them. Yeah.
I mean, they need to think about the, you know, I think long term, they need to think about the data center. They don't need to think about the data center. It's what we're going to do long term.
No doubt.
I don't think that's probably maybe that's not this year's budget issue. Maybe that's a next year's budget issue. But that's going to be a big ticket item if we, well, I don't know for sure how big a ticket item it's going to be. Maybe probably 100,000 or less, but pretty big ticket item.
The last meeting, that's what, you know, Sam said they're very close to getting through a lot of these, just these little things, get them, you know, fully functioning. Then he wants to come to court and show the areas that they have found cost savings, kind of get that dollar figure before they started. And I think your timing is just I think your timing is just about right. I would imagine that within the next two meetings, he'll be ready to come in and give us that. I think it was biannual or quarter. I know they're going to do full blown presentations to us.
I don't think that they've lost sight of that.
Oh no, I know that. I just know that, you know, just y'all are at the meetings, the other three aren't. And I just think they put that on the radar.
One, they do want to identify and outline where they think some cost savings are. And then it's some of their analysis on what systems they think, you know, need to be replaced immediately. And then those cost savings will carry over into FY27. So that, again, that next step would be to absorb some of those costs for hardware replacement in FY27 and or looking at what would it look like from a financial standpoint to relocate our servers to in-house, or do we continue with the data center contract at this point? I'm pretty comfortable with where they are. The biggest issue that I see for us right now to smooth out a lot of the day-to-day trouble ticket items is if we can get better, more consistent internet connections. And that's the main line coming in. Once it comes in, you know, if it comes in good, it gets disseminated good. If it does not come in good, it does not get disseminated good. And some of the things that some of our employees may be reporting is like a hollow sound echo or something like across the phone system that really has nothing to do with our internal wiring or the phone system itself. That is our connection through Lumen. But all good points, Mr. Belt, and I appreciate you bringing that up, that we'll have to address that. Any questions or any other comments concerning the transition of IT services? Okay. We'll move on to number 10, picking up with A, B, D, and E. First, hazard mitigation plan. I don't think we've made any movement on that. Mr. Belt, maybe I need to come see you and let's figure out what we need to do to
what I'm on my list of things to step up. I don't know what number one. I haven't got any response from them from my last transmission, but I don't know. Find out. Ask lots of questions I don't have good answers to, and I'd like to have a better answer for you for this one. I'm getting her. Sent them everything. I've put it all in the Dropbox. I've sent them. I've named it all with some little names, all the little files. It's got to be named right. All the stuff we uploaded to the Tiger system. They told them not to upload to the Tiger system. They review it all, upload it, I put in the paper request, just put it all. Just exactly. So, I'm just going to start to tell. I've added on my list of things to do to become a squeaky wheel. So, I have to become a squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
Okay. The RCP. I know we had MRB here, I guess, at the last meeting. I apologize for not being able to make that meeting. So y'all can update me.
I mean,
RCP?
They felt pretty confident, you know, that we're on track. I think we set a, I think a July to... I mean, the basically, we went through an entire list of the things that we wanted to be having the final, you know, RCP submission. You know, they're going to complete that. I think we're still waiting for some engineering to come back on something. And they felt that we're good. They also felt that if they had to, they could file an extension, but that is not their goal at all. I mean, they're pushing to get this thing finalized and finished.
Okay.
That what you guys got?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I just didn't. I left notes up there. I don't know. I guess he didn't get the but yeah, I left up there.
Okay.
But okay.
The biggest part will be the subdivision regulations.
Yeah. I sent an email to try to set that meeting up for me, but I hadn't come back. So it was bad.
Okay.
And we did discuss worst case scenario. We submit, which would be horrible, but we submit the subdivision, you know, kind of as is, and then we can go back and modify it. So it didn't hold up, you know, the plan. But I know they're having trouble with Mr. Bass trying to get him to work our subdivision rules. Is that fair enough?
No. You're good. Mm-hmm. Okay. 10C we've talked about, but is there anything else that the court wishes to consider under 10C?
Okay.
Okay. 10D is the DR 4781 FEMA disaster. I have not made the last two updates on that. The last I was tracking, there was a list of 8-9 PWs that I'd signed and sent to Matthew Weeks at Tatum, because I believe for all the PWs that we have, other than the planning ones, I believe Tatum has received that funding, and they're just waiting on completion paperwork from us.
There's two more projects still sitting with FEMA. One's some bridges, one's over crossing the painters. I'm going on there here and go. So six or eight for the bridges that are in CRC right now. They've sent us a scope of work. Now these are jobs that have no percentage of work really done to them yet. The bridge package is around $350,000. Me and Desiree reviewed that last week, sent that back to FEMA for approval. Once they get that, then we'll be sending letters down to Tatum. We think it's a little bit slower now. I think something with funding for FEMA that they're not working right now because of the Appropriations Committee or something. As Ray was mentioning, they're not getting paid right now, the employees, so I didn't know what that was.
So the scope and cost of the project and bridges for 137, 315, 322, and 3.4 are still in the works. That's the two not for very much.
Say those
again,
137,
315, 322, and 3.4.
Yes, we reviewed the scope. We agreed with it.
Okay.
There was one in there. It was a little bit off, but for the headache, we just accepted. Them have been sent back to FEMA saying we're good with it. So they're starting their process of moving it out of CRC and pushing it as complete. On the water crossing ones, we haven't seen any scope work yet on those. It'll be seeming larger than this one, just on the other. So them are the two that we really have to perform the work on and prove the scopes of work. There's the one we've already proved, the other one we're waiting to see them.
So do you know, there was a batch of those, it was like $700,000. I think we've already got the money on. Do you know for sure if that came in yet or not? I think that I was told it had.
I have not confirmed that we've received the money. I know that I've had got confirmation that Tatum had the money, and I think it was the 1st of February is when I sent that list in. I'd have to pull them.
So I was thinking that I saw something the other day for another 300-something on a few projects that had been approved.
Approved them, we just had to approve them and send them back.
Right.
Now, but this is on the FEMA side, so Tatum won't leave that funds.
So, Judge, those don't come through the portal. Those just get those. Well, I don't know if I'm asking, but those come through the portal or those just come through the email and you can sign off them?
I get an email. I get an email and I print that document. It has a closeout document attached to it.
Yes, you don't do that through the portal. You have to do that outside the portal.
I do that outside the portal.
Okay. Well, you might look. I cannot find, because they don't send me those emails. Those ones that they send you to print out and sign and stuff. See, I don't see those. I see the one that comes right before that usually.
Yeah.
I thought the other day I seen one that had another batch of like $300,000 in it.
Exactly.
But see, I don't know how long it takes from that email to the time they send you the one, because I don't get it yet.
Yeah.
But if you don't have anything, we might touch base with them. Maybe they're not working on him for any reason. But I think that there's another $300,000 that's just coming in pretty short order. But I can't find the email. I don't think I logged into the portal and saw it on there. I thought I saw an email of kind of that where it says, you know, this has been approved. We're going to be sending you this, that, and the other. But then I don't see the one where they actually send it.
I will go back and look again to make sure that we get that submitted if I've received that.
If not, maybe we need to give them a see what the status of their with their working situation is, and we need to prod them up a little.
Well, I need to reach out to them anyway, because you know one of the categories that we have not claimed anything against, and I've got to go back and look at the little Papa G manual thing. We're still entitled to Category Z, which is the administrative piece of this. And we talked about, you know, well, we just, at least I have not followed up with them to see what we need to submit to be able to recoup our portion of Category Z. It was Z, wasn't it?
I don't remember, Joe. Too many letters. There's too many. I was looking. I actually pulled out my little book the other day. A little book about that thing. And,
yes.
And I was looking at the 404 and the 406 and the ABCDEFGs. Got so confused. And because they had sent this email about the PW, this is $799,000. Well, that was before. That was a little while back, but I think we got it. I don't know. I get confused on which email, because sometimes some emails I get copied on and some I don't, and I haven't figured out yet how or why. Well, when I log on to the portal, I can see all the, you know, see all the projects, see all the stuff, but there, yeah, as you know, you can't sign them. There's nothing on there. You can't see the final documents on there. And they send, because they send those separate outside of the portal.
Yes.
And so you can't see on the portal whether or not those are available to be signed, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So it doesn't any good log on the portal and see if they're ready, because they're not on there.
They're not on there.
We may need to have a visit with folks about that administrative fund. So I think we probably, I know we can spend some administrative funds. And I don't think that's a way to do it. I think you can get that along the way. The labor one.
It was a category C, just a percentage. Oh, and I believe that.
Well, but we've already got that big. I mean, I don't think you can add weight to them in. I mean, we've already got that $700,000 to up to our percentage on it. It's done. Claim done.
It works pretty good. Time though, for me.
Why can't we get our admin money on it? I don't think we've got to wait till the very end. But I don't know.
According to the book, as best I recall, you could request your Category Z money up front. And our first three PGDMs, said that no, we had to wait. And so as we went through those three, I know it was at least three of them, then the Category Z kind of, those inquiries fell to the wayside. But yes, at this point, I believe the administrative is 5% of your total award. And even if there is some that's still outstanding, we should be able to get 5% of what we've been awarded up to this point. And I think that's a pretty good number. Okay, anything else under 4781? Okay, 10E, the only thing I have is I think you've seen some maybe media coverage of where those little micro sensors have been placed throughout the county. So I think that whole program and process is still in the works. And that's all I've got to cover on that. Any questions there? Okay. Moving on to item number 11, which is to consider accepting the 2025 racial profiling report from Precinct 4, Constable Burks, in accordance with the law enforcement policy on racial profiling, Article 2.132. That report went out to you, which basically states that he's had none.
Yeah.
Motion to accept.
Second.
Got a motion to accept from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion under item number 11? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 13, which is to consider county policy concerning the display of political advertisement on county-owned property. That policy has been distributed to you, as well as the reference material that I used to draft that. I believe Mr. Belt has reviewed that. I would defer to him for any comments that he may have concerning that particular court order.
I like to do it.
Legal and alike.
Make a motion to approve CC 2602.
We've got a motion to approve court order CC 2602 from Commissioner Matthews. Second, second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 13? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 15 is to discuss and consider the grant concerning Senate bill under immigration. I believe Commissioner Matthews asked to have this placed on the...
Sheriff came in here and talked to us, and it's more on the warrant side. Once they come in, and it's discovered, not going to be a great expense or anything to us as a county, not like we're promising bed or bless you,
bless
you. Or bodies to go to the border and chase boats. I mean, we would have to send somebody some training, my understanding. Is that correct, Sheriff?
Yes, they need to be more enforcement than they need to go train. And what we've done in the jail, I have a guy that's my jail sergeant that hired California police. And he took it upon himself to study up and challenge the test. And he is now a Texas case officer.
With all the regulations in California, I bet ours was easy.
Yeah.
Our T-fell was easy.
But long story short, we're trying to handle it as a dual purpose position to try to mitigate any kind of, you know, benefits or anything like that. What we asked for was just to bump his position to a certified peace officer, certified deputy, whatever that cost is, and then few dollars just don't take to say that couple of people continue, I guess, wanted to live in there still.
Yeah, to Georgia.
So,
and if you want to, Sheriff, most of the training that he's going to get, as well as the time that he uses, we can petition the state. There's a grant out there for this particular thing since they're requiring it. Some of it is reimbursable to us.
Yeah, the way I read, I didn't do a lot of legal research on it, but the way I read that deal, it's the it read to me like the sheriff shall pick one of these options.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
Not you can choose to not participate, but it is you shall.
Well, everybody shall, but we're focused on 100,000 and more. That's basically what's
yeah,
and it's just. I guess the state's put the cart in front of the horse again, and now they're going to throw a few dollars at it. My opinion is, you know, I think the $80,000 grant will handle exactly what we need to do. But we're not looking to add another
body.
another body with some more benefits and all that, all we want to do is just subsidize and change the description of that position to a certified deputy slash jail sergeant. That way he can take care of purpose in any immigration. My understanding is the credentials it took to do Senate Bill 22, it takes those same credentials for the sheriff to apply for this grant. And I don't have this credential. It's 287G if you need to. Want to research any more?
Yeah, the state's just Senate Bill 8 and then right. The requirement is 287G.
I didn't know anybody else was going down.
Oh, well, no. Yeah. And I guess I'm even just kind of almost asking why we're here. You know, I'm going, sheriff's an elected official. Can't he apply for grants on his own, but he doesn't have the credentials to do it?
Then I'll make the approval from the court to accept it.
Right. To accept it.
And then the modification in my job description, that would, I guess, need to go through the treasurer to let them know that that position would be modified. Then, once the acceptance of the grant, we could reimburse the money that it helps out of that and reimburse, you know, travel for the training. Any necessary equipment or whatever that will require.
Yeah, it should offer them an 80, you know.
Yeah. I think we're going to not even come close to spending half of it, yeah. You know, but
I agree.
That would be money that could be put into other equipment or other training for that particular topic, you know, ICE immigration. I think it's a no-brainer personally because of the, you know, temperature of the our constituents, you know, wanting us to utilize grant funding as much as we can, and this is right here in our lap, and it's a need to shall versus a want. I just think it's a no-brainer personally.
Senate Bill, okay, so SB 22 is very clear that that money comes, you know, to the court, and then, you know, we disperse it to the sheriff. You know if this one is the same, or is this, okay, so again, I got to say, you need,
well, the sheriff is the one that applies for it.
Right.
But as far as dispensing it, I haven't seen anything clear on it.
Okay. So what would it take to get you credentials to do that?
To dispense it?
No, to apply for it.
Apply for it? I just need the Senate Bill 22, log in and password.
It's on the comptroller's website. It's a tab underneath the SB 22. It's at SB 8 News for the Sheriff of Immigration Law Enforcement Grant Program. $80,000 in the population of 100,000 or less. says a sheriff is eligible to apply for the grant. The sheriff has entered into an immigration law enforcement agreement that's described by government code section 753051, which is what I read. I did not read this 27 statute, this federal statute. Have you looked at this, Judge, to see whether or not you have to log in through your SB22 deal and do it, or is it a separate?
It is not on SB 22.
It's under the same tab under that on the comptroller's website. It looks like an SB8. What it says, SB8 dues.
Yeah, on the surface, that's what it sounded like to me, that the sheriff can get his own credential under that. And just apply for it. Get it, bring it in, we ratify it, or accept it, and then how you spend the money within your department, as long as you're following the rules, I don't.
Yeah, I wonder if we were asking, because the way the email came out on how to apply for it, basically said that you have to utilize the same credentials.
Oh, okay.
Then you for SB20s.
In an effort to maybe simplify this and kind of streamline it, I think the action that would be warranted today is that the court authorizes the application for grant funding under SBA. And then I will look at the comptroller's website. I'll see if it requires my login credentials or if there's another agency. But I think what we're trying to get at today is authorizing the application for that grant. Is that?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, we have a motion from Commissioner Matthews to authorize the application for grant fund under SB 8.
Second.
Second from Commissioner Weddle. Any further discussion under item number 15? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have motion carries. I'm going to ask that the court, we jump down to our three items listed under our closed meeting executive session. We've got one individual here to meet with us on one of these items, as well as we've got a scheduled teleconference coming up. So we were trying to give some predictability to those individuals. And I know that there's just a couple other things to clear up, but I want to value their time because we're just a little bit over. But pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.071, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to consult the county attorney regarding pending litigation and a matter subject to attorney-client confidentiality to include, but not limited to, that case of the County of Coryell versus Purdue Pharma in the 152nd District Court of Harris County. With that, pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.072, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to deliberate the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property, as well as pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.087, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to deliberate matters regarding commercial or financial information that the governmental body has received from a business prospect that the governmental body seeks to have, locate, stay, or expand in or near the territory of the governmental body and with which the governmental body is conducting economic development negotiations. So with that, we will reconvene in the front conference room as quickly as everyone can get there. If you need to take a quick restroom break on the way, certainly feel free to do that. But we want to make sure we can get up there and get started as quickly as possible. So we are in recess. Thank you. Okay, I've got 118. We'll reconvene in open session at this time, picking up with item number 16 on the agenda, which is to pay bills. We've had bills presented in the amount of $1,690,167.77. We got a motion to pay bills from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 16? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Reports, Commissioner Matthews. Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. Commissioner Weddle.
I have nothing.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Basham.
They had the military fish fry Friday, had a good turnout. About 400 soldiers were there, and then we had the Ogilvy Lions Club. That was making round up Saturday, Sunday. Had a really good turnout. About 2,600 people showed up. So,
56th consecutive.
Yep, 56th consecutive round snake roundup. And had a, they had over 200 snakes this year. So.
I've heard that Sweetwater is feeling the heat from the rattle, the Oglesby rattlesnake really roundup.
That's probably one of the best ones that I've ever seen. They did an excellent job.
Yeah, good deal. Good deal. Well, congratulations to them. And well, you. You're part of that line.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good. Commissioner Taylor?
Not a whole lot. I know we're having a benefit out at Jonesboro for a young man out there that's pretty much going through the same stuff Stephen went through. They hadn't got everything completely diagnosed, but he was weighing around 245, 250, and he's down to 130 in 45 days.
Oh, gosh.
And he can't eat, can't drink. So they're having a little benefit for him Sunday. From 11 to whenever they run out, it's a fish fry.
Okay. All right.
So, Ken, come out and support him. And other than that, pray for rain.
Amen.
You let him take that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
He's feeling bad. I'm
going to
help him out.
No, I understand completely. Okay. That concludes the business of the court today. We stand adjourned. Thank you all.